cycling podcast Femina in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Orla Shinoui.
Hello, Richard.
You're very subdued, Orla.
I'm trying to tame my excitement.
Are you okay?
I'm trying to contain myself. I can't allow myself to be too exuberant.
Ah, don't hold yourself
back.
That's
how I live my life, though. I'm always containing.
Just saving it for
later.
Yeah,
exactly.
And Rose Manley.
Hello. Sorry, I spoke before I was introduced.
That's okay.
Is that a faux pas? Don't know.
No, it's fine. How are you both? It's been a while. We're at the end of May. This is the May episode of the cycling podcast Femina. There's been a lot of racing that we'll hear about in your roundup, Orla. There's a lot to come. I've seen quite a lot of you, Rose, because you were at the Giro d'Italia.
I was. Just got back and enjoyed the sunshine and...
You sort of... almost got us an interview at the Giro for the cycling podcast Femina because
that sounds like
but there was quite a nice story that you told me.
That's true. Well, I was filming for Quickstep Floors for a video. We were the video crew for the Giro d'Italia for them, and so Elia Viviani, we're doing a story about him. And then I'm on the rest day, and then who do I see but Elena Cecchini, obviously his girlfriend, who's coming to visit, and she was just fitting in between all of her racing, doing Durango and Birra. Then she came back, and she saw him win, which was very special. And then who is also behind the podium with Elena, but Elena Amilusic as well.
But there was also another story, wasn't there?
Oh.
That from the Giro Rosa last year, when he went to visit her.
Oh,
there.
Yes. Yeah, I was. Yeah, that was a feature I was doing about Elena Cecchini. It's like I stalk them, isn't it? It's starting to get a little bit suspicious. But and Elia turned up on the last day of the Giro Rosa, and I caught a little grab with him. I said, "Oh, tell us a bit about what Elena is like off the bike." And he was like, "I just love her so much. What can I say?" And it's very sweet. Very sweet moment.
Excellent. Orla, what have you been up to?
I've been watching a lot of bike racing from afar. And I've been up at the Tour de Yorkshire as well. So that's been really good fun.
Well, it seems a long time ago. That happened at the same weekend as the opening weekend of the Giro. So I missed that. But you were there and you've got some interviews from there that we'll hear in part two.
Yep.
But we should hear your news roundup because we need to catch up with what's actually happened.
Yeah, there is a lot to catch up on. So first of all, in the 10th round of the Women's World Tour took us to the Tour of Chongming Island, the three-day stage race traditionally for the sprinters. And we look at the calibre of teams racing here. We've mentioned this before, I think, but notable in their absence were Bowles Dolman, Sunweb, Canyon SRAM. They chose to stay in Europe to race. But the start list did have... arguably the world's top sprinters lining up. Last year's winner Julian Dora, Commonwealth champion Chloe Hosking, and two-time stage winner from last year Kirsten Wild. I should maybe point out this is potentially is this really our first ever live cycling podcast Femina podcast in front of a live audience?
Yeah, but we've had an audience of this sort of age before for the cycling podcast regular with your daughter Eve.
That's right. Yeah. But this time around it's little baby Maxime who's come to learn a little bit. You, Maxime?
He does love,
or as Eve calls him, Maxime.
He does Baby love Maxime. He does love his women's cycling, so he wanted to get an early.
Oh, I wish you could see smiles on the podcast. That was too cute. Oh, he's a little attention seeker, just like his daddy. Eh? Anyway, listen to this, Maxime, because it gets really, really exciting. Mm-hmm. It does. So anyway, Tour of Chongming Island, plenty of drama in this year's race, quite a bit of the unexpected as well. Stage one, predictable in so much as it finished in a sprint. The field of riders is not quite what we would have expected, though, because of two big crashes in the finale. Former world champion Giorgia Bronzini of Silence Pro Cycling took the first stage from the reduced bunch. The first crash happened with just under 3 kilometres to go. And that took out the sprint trains of Chloe Hosking and Kendall Ryan. Some 30 riders were left in the front group. And the second big crash then came on the finishing straight, about 250 metres from the line, and took out two big names, defending champion Julian Dora and Kirsten Wild. And that left only about 10 riders to sprint for the win, with Bronzini taking that one. And then in stage two, that really shook the race up, to find the GC. For only the fifth time in the race's 12-year history, if my calculations are correct, the stage didn't finish in a mass sprint, but with a breakaway, which is led by former German champion Charlotte Becker. She took the win. as much to the credit of Becca as it was a failure on the part of the sprint teams, I would say. She was one of five riders to escape with 62 kilometres to go. The sprint teams seemed unwilling to take up the chase, and they built a lead of almost 4 minutes before the peloton finally reacted. So Becca's lead proved to be an unassailable one going into the final day. She had 1 minute 13 over Bronzini, and all she and her high-tech products team had to do in the closing stage was monitor attacks, really. Ended much more predictably, a bunch sprint, Kirsten Wild taking the win for Wiggle High Five, Julian Dora for Mitchelton Scott in second, and Georgia Bronzini, Silence Pro Cycling, in third. So Becker, the overall winner of that race, and a huge result for her and for high-tech products Birk Sport. It was the Norwegian team's first win of the season, and their first since Kirsten Wild won a stage of the Amgen Tour of California in 2016. So we're going to chat a little bit about that team, I understand. On to the Tour de Yorkshire, not a World Tour race, but we figured that given the quality of the field, the fact it's one of the few races with live TV coverage, and the quality of the racing itself, really, means that it's worthy of more than a mention. It was the first ever two-day edition of the race with a sprint stage and a mountaintop finish. Christian Prudhomme was at the race. I think maybe he could learn a thing or two about putting together more than one stage in a row for La Course. You never know. Stage one was the sprint, the same finish as 2016 when it was a one-day event. Kirsten Wild took the honours on that day, and once again she won the sprint into Doncaster for Wiggle High Five. An excellent lead out for her, beating 2016 world champion Amelie Didericsen of Bols Dolmans and Britain's Alice Barnes of Canyon SRAM. I don't know if either of you got to watch that with your Giro responsibilities, but the last 10 kilometres of stage one were absolutely brilliant. You had the different sprint trains trying to take control at different stages, not quite managing it. Canyon SRAM, then Sunweb, then Wiggle High Five. She was second wheel with more than 500 metres to go. And then she was able to just surf on other team's wheels, really, up to the line.
I did watch, actually.
It was really good, wasn't it?
One of those in-the-saddle sprints, wasn't it?
She was seated.
Someone went off course, didn't they, just before the finish? Alice Barnes was up there, wasn't she? She rode very well.
Yep, and there was a little bit of confusion with the race. Tiffany Cromwell, actually, I spoke to her afterwards, and we've got a little bit from her coming up. But there was confusion. I think the motorbikes were trying to take them one direction, and the race was actually supposed to go the other direction. So, yeah, a few riders went, of course. Now, with half an eye on the GC and the climbing the following day, Danny Rowe, riding for Great Britain at this race, played a very clever game, I thought. She picked up the crucial seconds in the intermediate sprints to put her at the top of the GC contenders going into the final day. And stage two took us up the wonderfully named Cow and Calf for the first summit finish of the race. Whenever, actually, I heard that somebody said, "Are you going to be at the Cow and Calf on a Friday?" And I thought, "Oh, is that a pub?" I didn't realise that was the actual name
probably
of the climb.
Yeah,
I think there is one as well. But Megan Guarnier of Bols Dolmans attacked a few hundred metres from the summit, rode away from a select group of 14 riders to take the stage and the overall win. Alina Amialusic, I'm looking at you, Rose, because you pronounce that well, of Canyon SRAM crossed the line in second place. Danny Rowe taking third, and her intermediate sprint game proved to be a clever one. Rowe finishing second overall, a result that the Commonwealth Road Race medalist and track world and Olympic champion was delighted with. And Guarnier, actually, celebrating on her 33rd birthday, no less. So a good day for her. Tour of California, three-day race, which was an unfortunate clash in the calendar for World Tour teams having to choose between racing here and at Beira. More on that in a moment. Stage one, though, was won by Kendall Ryan of Team TIBCO Silicon Valley Bank. She took her first ever UCI Women's World Tour victory on stage one, beating Corin Rivera into fourth place, actually. Emma White of Rally Cycling in second and Annette Edmondson in third. Stage two was a hillier affair. Is this going on too long? Is this too long a roundup?
Sorry, what was that?
There's a lot of racing to get through.
It's been a long time since we last convened.
I'm getting bored of the sound of my own voice.
I was enjoying it.
Okay, that's good.
It has been a long time.
Stage two then, Queen Stage, won by United Healthcare's Katie Hall. She rode to an impressive solo victory in South Lake Tahoe, where it's illegal to be drunk in public, as I recall. I just remember that from my time in Lake Tahoe. Anyway, that's by the by. Taylor Wiles of Trek Drops finished 25 seconds back in second place. Cassia Nieva-Doma finishing in third. So Hall took the overall leadership going into the final stage, which was won by the Cuban rider Arlenis Sierra of Astana. She staged a perfectly timed sprint for the finish into Sacramento. Now, we were chatting about her just beforehand. And Arlenis Sierra has an incredible backstory, if any of you haven't heard or read it yet. A few of our fellow journalists were tweeting about it, actually, a few days ago. Dan Lloyd, Mikael Conde. She grew up in humble surroundings in Cuba, sharing a room with her parents and siblings in a house that they also shared with their grandparents. She left home at the age of 12 to join a cycling school slash academy as a way to get some sort of a future. Her sister had already gone to tennis school, but because they didn't have any money and both their parents were nurses, they divided their mother's nursing gowns between them to have something to wear while they were at their sports schools. Incredible. Their parents would come and visit at weekends to wash their clothes. She could only train when the boys had finished their sessions because there were only two bikes available at the school. Incredible rags to riches story, really. Mm. I mean, rich is obviously relative in women's cycling, but a brilliant victory for her, a first World Tour win. Alexis Ryan then of Canyon Tram and Emma White of Rally came in second and third to round out the podium. And stage two's winner, Katie Hall, finished safely in the bunch to win the race overall. Then finally to Beira, or Emakumeen Beira, I think, to give it the full title. It's been around for 30 years, but it's only been added to the Women's World Tour this year. Lots of climbing, so it's a very challenging race, probably about the most challenging outside of the Giro Rosa. Ended up being a fantastic race for Mitchelton Scott. Stage one, Sabrina Stultjens of Wildales took a solo victory. Lisa Brenner of Canyon Tram sprinted to second, and Georgia Bronzini of Silence in third. Stage two, an individual time trial, so a little surprise at World Time Trial champion Annemiek van Vleuten of Mitchelton Scott took the stage and the race lead. Anna van der Breggen was 14 seconds slower, and former World Time Trial champion Lisa Brenner of Wiggle High Five in third. Amy Peters of Bowles Dolmans won stage three, but Annemiek van Vleuten narrowly held on to the race lead. And then on stage four, Amanda Spratt of Mitchelton Scott won the final stage, riding solo for more than 50 kilometres, taking the white leader's jersey off the shoulders of her teammate Annemiek van Vleuten, who finished second overall. So brilliant race for Mitchelton Scott. They won two stages, finished first, second and fourth overall. Anna van der Breggen of Bowles Dolmans retains the World Tour leader's jersey because she won the points classification as well as third overall.
It's not finished, is it?
That's your race roundup, folks.
Well, I personally I'm glad that it's as comprehensive as it is, Orla, because finding information about some of these races is extremely difficult.
Well, that is actually why, even though I know it's long, so it's not long, I don't think, but I think it is important to make it comprehensive because, as you say, even when we're following the races and I'm writing the roundup, it can be quite a challenge to find everything. Certainly, you don't find everything in the one place. So that's why I thought it's best if we are promoting this wonderful sport.
If you skip through it, I recommend that you go back and listen to it properly
several times. Take notes.
You know, if you start skipping through it about 12 minutes in, just go back and have a good proper listen. Play it. You can do it. You can play it fast speed, can't you? Anyway,
I wouldn't recommend that with my.
No. Taking a few of the points, though, let's tour the Yorkshire. Just a quick note on that, because as you said, it's not Women's World Tour. I spoke to Gary Verity, actually, the organiser there, and he says no desire to increase it beyond 2 days. It's the men's race now is 4 days. He would like to increase the length of the stages, and he wants to take that discussion up with the UCI because he finds the restrictions on the length of stages quite, restrictive. Mm. So that's what he would like to do. Not bothered at all about becoming Women's World Tour. Women are restricted. I think it's 140 kilometres for one-day events. And, it's 160 kilometres for one-day events, 140 kilometres for stage races. So he would like them to be able to do a bit more than that. Mm. And that seems logical.
And that's a raised number than it was, I think,
It was raised last year. Yeah. So, yeah, it's creeping up, but it makes it quite difficult for stage race organisers, especially when you're dealing with, routes that might have different start locations and so on. So he would like the stages to be longer.
But it is funny, isn't it? Because like in men's cycling, it's like this move to make
good point.
Stages shorter to make them a bit more energetic and animated.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
But it's probably a logistical issue as much as anything else. Oh, yeah. Rather than wanting to see the woman racing for longer, it's making it easier to organise, which is fair enough.
Quick word on Amanda Spratt, because we heard from her in the last episode, and you know she was seemed then on the verge of a breakthrough. I mean, great timing for our interview. Obviously, that was the spur that. but she was highly placed in the Ardennes Classic. She was third Amstel Gold. She was second at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Almost won it, but Anna van der Breggen got her before the line. She won Bira, and she won it in a very impressive style. We were wondering whether Mitchelton Scott's success at the Giro with Simon Yates and co had any kind of effect on the women's team as well, whether that did give them any kind of morale boost or anything. We must find out from her if that is the case. I think they are kind of a family.
If they're closely linked as a team, it would make sense to a certain extent, because a lot of winning can be down to unmeasurables. Mm. And it can be as much about atmosphere and mood and confidence as anything else. So you never know. We should ask them.
54 kilometres on her own. I mean, albeit she had a teammate behind her. But very, very impressive on those roads. I know they're Basque Country roads very well, and they are absolutely brutal. A good outside bet, Amanda Spratt, for the World Championships, which she spoke about.
She went backpacking to recon that, didn't she?
A bit like Kasia Nevedoma's win at stage one of the women's tour last year. The other race that was on was Tour California, and there was an unfortunate clash. The UCI have promised that this won't happen again, which means it probably will. But Bira began on the day that the Tour of California ended, so obviously you couldn't do both, even with the time difference.
Logistically.
I don't even know how that would work. I haven't figured that one out.
No, clearly not.
But it did seem to weaken the field in California, which was a great shame. But there was a very strong performance there from Taylor Wiles of Trek Drops, a new signing for them this year. And a lot's changed at that team, and it's a team that we've followed from their inception. I caught up with Bob Varney, who runs Trek Drops, just to find out how Tour of California had gone and about that placing for Taylor Wiles. It's a team that it's had, as he tells us, they've had their challenges this season. They lost their DS, Lauren Rowney, who left, and they've also lost Molly Weaver, the British rider, who just today has announced her, she's not calling it retirement, but she's taking a leave. And she's written a very honest blog about her battles with depression, the spark for which she says was a terrible crash that she suffered just over a year ago. And we had an interview with her last year on the podcast about that. We'll talk a bit more about that after we've heard from Bob Varney. So Bob, we met over the winter. You were quite excited about Taylor Wiles, who you just signed, and you became Trek Drops, of course. Now, she was second at the Tour of California recently. Is that your best result to date?
Yeah, I think it probably is. It's quite an interesting one. A few people have spoken to me about that. We mustn't forget we had a second in a World Tour stage race before with Alice last year, the OVO Energy Women's Tour. She was second in a big bunch sprint to Toby Hoskin, Leamington Spa, I think, which was an amazing result. We had some good teamwork that day, which was we were all very proud and very pleased of. But yeah, this I think is another level up. It's probably the top rung of what we've done in the last 2.5 years. Our American Californian leader, in a two-up breakaway on the Queen stage of the Amgen Tour of California. Yeah, and then second on GC as well the day after. So yeah, I think you're right. It's a long answer, but yes, it is the pinnacle of what we've achieved so far in 2.5 years.
And I guess that was a very important race for you as well, given your sponsorship now with Trek.
Yes, indeed. Obviously Trek, big global business, but American business, very proud of that. We wanted to support them. Obviously, we had a dilemma with the clash with the race in the Basque Country, Bira. Part of us would like to have been there. We've got a good roster for that race. At the end of the day, it was no decision to make. We've been to California twice before. The organisers trusted us right from the very beginning. So, we went there, we went back. I did our third third edition of the race, yeah. And all, you know, each edition's got more support. Okay, it was disappointing not to have 4 days this year, but we, you know, they retained the Queen stage, and each of the stage finishes coincided with the guys, so that created a lot more visibility. Really good, really good, positive race for all of us.
And how has it been this year with the sponsorship with Trek? It's just elevated the team, I suppose, put you on a slightly different level, and with some of the riders that you have. Has there been a big change this year? Has it felt like a different team, or just a natural progression from last year?
From a personal point of view, we didn't want it to change the look and feel of the team. That was one of the things that Trek were particularly keen. They liked that. They wanted to support that. So they've never really put us under any pressure for performances. But we are competitive, super competitive. We might smile a lot, but we want to win bike races. We replaced Alice with Eva Berman, who's had some really, really standout performances in the classics. We had Taylor on more of a slow burn program, which is just starting to come into fruition. California, she's in Turrigan now, starting tonight, and then obviously win the Giro. So she's one of our big stage race leaders. So yeah, it has changed things a bit, but I don't think it's changed things as much as you may imply or you might suggest. To be honest, we still have a lot of fun. We still hold our founding principles very much dear to heart, and would stick up for those if there's any commercial conflict. We would like to think that we've married both philosophies together for the greater good. All the girls are getting paid now. They're not getting paid $1 million. Two or three of the girls have joined us for less money but more opportunities, which is something we're finding all the time. Even now I'm having emails from riders that want to join next year, that they want the race program, they want training camps, they want the professionalism that they see in what we do, and that for me is very important.
A big month or so coming up, Oval Energy Women's Tour, of course, and you're riding the Giro for the first time. That's quite a lot to take on. What can we expect to see at both those races, and have you finalised your selections for those races yet?
We've had some challenges behind the scenes with injury, with sickness, so we've not had a full roster for the whole year. We've not really spoken too much about that in public. We've supported the riders concerned in-house, but so we've had some challenges to overcome that have affected which riders will be riding certain races, and we've had to readjust. We've had to readjust some of our original plans from last December at our first training camp. So our leader for the OVO Energy Women's Tour is going to be Eva Berman, the Dutch rider I spoke about briefly earlier. So we changed her program the last month or so. She was originally going to do all of the tour series, but we withdrew her from that, and she's now in Turrigan. So she had a bit of a rest because she started in Australia. So we backed her off a bit, and now she started to build up for Turrigan. So she should be in really good shape for the OVO Energy Women's Tour. And Taylor will be leader for the Giro with the longer time trials. She's also very experienced. She's ridden that race a lot. So that's the way we're looking at the next two big races.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina, as indeed they do sponsor the cycling podcast. And I have to tell you, and I've not told you about this, but you must all be preparing yourselves, not me obviously, for the Women's 100 on September the 15th.
Oh. I did know about that, actually. I might be training for that.
Whoa.
This sounds like a package.
Third year running, Rafa invite women the world over to join the challenge of running 100 kilometres on the same day. Last year, over 8,000 cyclists participated in the Rafa Women's 100, either by joining Rafa or ambassador-led rides organising or participating in one of over 350 women's 100 rides locally, or riding solo to complete the distance. You can, they've got a pretty active Facebook group. You can get involved there. But it's a real global movement. It's not a competition to see who's the fastest. It's about gathering a global community of women to take part in a shared adventure. So there are group rides leaving from Rafa Cycle Clubs. There are rides organised across the globe. And it's, as I said earlier, easy to join a ride, gather friends, or set up your own ride. So...
Sounds like Max seems up for it anyway.
You can sign up for it at rafa.cc or find them on Facebook, the Rafa Women's 100, and you might be on the same ride as Rose and Orla.
Oh,
if you're lucky.
You can get your kilt out.
I'll be DS.
Oh no, in the car behind.
Do you really think we're going to take instruction from you?
Yes.
I mean, really?
Yes, I do.
I'll take a tool. That's two.
Sticky bottle.
Yeah. Sticky bottle, no problem.
Anyone? Now, before we took a break there, we heard from Bob Varney, who owns and runs Trek Drops. And I mentioned that a blog's just been published today from Molly Weaver, who we had on last year on the podcast, gave a very interesting and quite inspirational interview in a way, because she'd suffered a terrible setback. She'd broken her neck, 5 vertebrae, 4 ribs, her sternum, her shoulder. She'd punctured the lung and tore an organ. She thought it was her kidney, but she wasn't sure. But she'd been hit by a car while training near Girona, where she lives. She was very upbeat and, you know, determined to carry on with her life, get back to cycling, get back to sport. She moved from Team Sunweb to Trek Drops over the winter, and she's been kind of missing from racing this year. And she's revealed why today, that she's been suffering from depression, and the crash with the car was, she says, the spark for that. And it's very well written essay, really. I don't want to call it a blog. It is a blog, but blog sounds sort of less than what it is, because it's a very well written and quite moving essay that she's written. And as I said, she's not calling it retirement. She's taking a break, and I guess she will return if and when she feels ready.
Yeah, the just reading through her words just really, really touched me. I find it quite a difficult read, actually, because she is so honest and so open, and we don't often get that. And I think even still, depression is something that is alluded to an awful lot. And because it's talked about in the media, people think that it's dealt with. It's a box that's been ticked almost. Oh, we know what depression is. We know what mental health issues are. And so obviously everybody knows how to seek help. But she talks about, she said that one of her problems really was, she said her biggest mistake was not doing anything to stamp it out at the first signs of trouble. And of course, the problem with, if anyone has ever suffered depression or knows anyone who has, the problem is you're in the grips of, as she calls it very accurately, a demon. You cannot possibly know exactly how far you're going to go into it, and you also have this image of yourself that is usually of that you're stronger than that, and it's not something that happens to you. I mean, I suffered depression when my little one was born, and so for me, it's quite an emotional read, and I have to applaud Molly, and my heart absolutely breaks for her to be going through this. I would say that probably if she's at the stage where she can be as open about it as she can, that would suggest that she's in a significant period of recovery from it, and that she's doing something about it. Because where before you get to that stage, you can't really talk to anyone, you can't vocalise anything, you can't even make sense of your thoughts in your own head. So I've got to just wish her all the very best in her recovery and applaud her for being so open about it. And it was also quite interesting that she says that in an industry like cycling, where it's as much about your image as anything else, you want to preserve that image. And she talks about the social media lie, which is all too present in the world of cycling. She says that riders are outwardly presenting the picture of the perfect life, the dream of being a professional athlete. And that's what we see on social media, on Instagram. We see these wonderful, beautiful pictures of bikes placed at the top of a climb, or, you know, the views that riders get on their daily training sessions, often in the sunshine. And it looks like an idyllic life. And the problem is that if you're supposed to be living that life, I guess, and you're seeing the world through that particular microscope, and it doesn't match up with how you envisage it to be, or how you're living your life, I guess, then that's where the problems lie. And that's the problem, I guess, with social media as well. You just can't really believe everything that you see. But
I suppose that's what sponsors want as well. It's that kind of beautiful image of cycling, and lots of, I think that riders are kind of pushed to do more social media, because especially for women riders, it's a possible way of getting personal sponsorships and better wages through that way as well. So it's an incredible pressure, and to be in such a public space and to not be able to be absent from the start line and not have anyone say, oh, you know, where's Molly Weaver? You know, I thought that she was targeting this. Must be incredibly difficult.
And that's something even that I've spoken about in terms of trying to encourage the growth of women cycling is that riders and teams can harness the power of social media, you know, to be able to boost their image and boost their profile and attract sponsors. And that is the other side of it, of course, that social media isn't true. It's not real. And so I guess at the same time as you're trying to build that kind of a profile, there needs to be some sort of duty of care towards the athlete. I say that, but at the same time, a duty of care does not mean that someone will not suffer depression. But I guess if people are on the lookout for it a little bit more, the key is, as Molly says, getting help as quickly as possible, because then you're getting better as quickly as possible. And just being a bit more aware that while these young, incredibly fit athletes look like they're living the dream, that chances are things are very different inside their heads as to what you see on the outside.
I think also you can't reduce depression to cause and effect, but
it's a chemical imbalance in the brain. So,
absolutely,
yeah.
But you know, that was a almost life-ending crash that she had. It was terrible, and there's a pressure on athletes as well, that self-inflicted too, to come back from that kind of, no matter how bad it is, as quickly as possible.
It's what makes them top athletes.
Well,
as well,
it is,
you know,
it is,
that
but,
pressure to be better, to always achieve more.
But sometimes the after effects, the psychological after effects of a crash like that aren't dealt with. There isn't time, there isn't space. The emphasis then is all on the physical recovery, isn't it? And we see that a lot with lots of riders who suffer in lots of ways after a crash. They recover physically, but psychologically they're scarred, and hopefully she can recover. And you know, looking at her social media posts, she's still riding her bike clearly, and hopefully enjoying riding her bike, and that will be, I'm sure, a very important part of her recovery. So we wish her all the best. And you know, if you want to listen back to her interview last year, it was really fascinating, quite gruesome in its detail at times, but really interesting. I think it was episode 15 of the Cycling Podcast Fair Manager last July, I think we played it.
We should also give the website for anyone who wants to read her statement. It's on molly-weaver.com. As I say, you said rather, Richard, it's not a statement, it's not a blog, it's an essay essentially, and it's very well written.
It certainly is. Orla, we mentioned earlier, you were up in Yorkshire at the Tour de Yorkshire. You're going to bring us a little report from there, I think.
I mean, you spoke
to a few people. Will we hear that now?
Let's do it. Anna Christian of Trek drops in the most active rider jersey. Congratulations. That was quite a way to animate the race. What was the race plan going into the day?
We were working for Lucy for the sprints, Lucy Shaw, and then we kind of knew it was going to be a GC day tomorrow, so Bob was just like, oh, be active if you want to be active, you know, get into the break. So we kind of just had a plan to kind of be aggressive throughout the race, and then when it came to the finish, you know, obviously work for Lucy for the sprint, but I'm not too sure where she actually finished then. But yeah, we had quite a big gap at one point. I think it got to like 140 at the most, but yeah, there was a point when Bob was in my ear, and I think he was getting really excited, and he kind of hoped I was going to stay away. But so when he was saying, I thought maybe they're just not cooperating, maybe they're all looking at each other, maybe, you know, Bowles and Wiggle and that are all looking at each other to work. But yeah, at one point we were working really well together, me and Natalie, but I think she thought I kind of went to attack her, which I didn't. I kind of just picked up the speed out of a corner, and then she kind of attacked me. I think she thought I'll get the jump on her first, and then we ended up just riding like 25 metres apart for ages then. But I think maybe if we carried on working together, we could have maybe held them off a bit longer, and then it maybe would have, never know what could happen. But I think when they got working, when, you know, Bowles and Wiggle got on the front, you know, it's going to be hard to stay away.
So how much communication was there between the two of you then on the bike to decide what the strategy could be? Obviously not enough communication, it sounds like.
Maybe we should have spoke a bit more. But I was trying to encourage it a bit more, because I kind of wanted to stay as long as I could. And we maybe should have... I was hoping to try and get back across to her and be like, look, if we just keep working properly then. But yeah, I don't know why she hovered ahead, but yeah, it was a good day out.
But yeah, brilliant day nonetheless for you, isn't it? Great result.
Danny Rowe, riding for Great Britain.
to today. Congratulations. It was a really strong ride. You've picked up three handy bonus seconds heading into the tough stage tomorrow. With a sprint on the card today, was that the plan at the start of the day?
Yeah, it was. I just wanted to test my legs, and I think any seconds are going to help for tomorrow. And yeah, it was nice. I don't normally go for the sprints, so it was good to test the legs. And the girls rode really well today. You know, we had Julian in the car giving us orders, and they all did fantastically from such a young team. So it was really impressive. And yeah, couldn't have gone much better, to be honest.
It looked like with the final sprint that you timed it perfectly. The others maybe not so much. It looked like they went early, did they?
Yeah, they did go quite early. I knew it was headwind, so I kind of just left it late. And to be honest, I thought, oh, I've screwed this up. I'm way too far back. But I kind of had quite a lot of, gas. And I just thought, oh, I'll just go left and give it everything and lunge for the line. I think my sprinting lunges from the track helped. I just sort of went for it and, yeah, sort of said on the radio, did I get it? And I did, so that was quite nice to pick up that, I think, extra 1 second, because obviously the two were away. So, yeah, it was great. It was nice to have that sort of morale and confidence then going into the finish, just to stay safe and know that I've got good legs for tomorrow.
Everyone talks about the fans and the support along the road for this race, also the organisation and the level of investment. How does it compare with the races on offer elsewhere in the continent, for example?
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to really support this race. It's amazing that we've got coverage from start to finish, Asda being an incredible sponsor for the race, and the support on the roads is just incredible. You know, having all the school kids out, I get goosebumps every time we ride through a town and there's hundreds of school kids on the side of the road cheering. It's just amazing, and it's nice to hopefully try and inspire the next generation with that. So yeah, it's really exciting. It's great that we've got two stages this year. Hopefully it can improve again next year, but I think, yeah, the future's bright for women's cycling. It's nice to have kind of been in it while it's really boomed, I guess. So I've seen a massive change since I started riding.
Because this isn't a women's world tour race yet, at least anyway. And yet we have the very best riders in the world here. Is that why they're attracted here? Because it's such a well done race?
Yeah, obviously there's great prize money as well, so can't forget that. We don't have many opportunities to win prize money similar to the men, so I think that brings a lot of the teams to the race. And yeah, it's just, you know, I think people, I actually forgot it wasn't a world tour race. You know, that's how much of a profile the race has got, and I don't see why it can't be a world tour race in the future. Everyone talks about the Tour of Yorkshire being one of the biggest races, so I think that's brilliant.
Tiffany Cromwell of Canyon SRAM.
How did that pan out? Yeah, pretty good, you know. Obviously, we're aiming for the podium, or we were working for Alice, and you know, she did a great sprint. You know, we got Tanya here, who's one of our Zwift riders, and, you know, sort of like teaching her the ropes, but, you know, she did amazing there. And, like, Eleona was incredible in the lead out. Just, I messed up a little bit because the motorbikes were confusing in the final. Didn't know which direction to go, but luckily the rest of the girls were able to come through.
Was that when we saw the race almost splitting through the bollards? What happened there?
The motorbikes were directing left and then some were saying straight, and you just didn't know. Yeah, I was confused because they were saying left, so I thought left, and then next thing it's straight. But yeah, a bit kind of confusing.
So how would you judge today on the road then for the team and ahead of tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, I think we're pretty happy with that. Of course, we want a stage win, but to be on the podium is a great start. And, you know, Alice is one of our younger riders, and today was pretty uneventful for us. It was just recovering. Tomorrow is where the GC will be made. It's a really, really hard stage, but I think we're happy with where we're at. And, you know, tomorrow we'll go again to try fight for the stage and see what we can do.
You say about Anna being a Zwift rider, I mean, that's quite a step up, isn't it, from being Zwift onto full stage road racing. How has she found that, and how have you found bringing her through?
Yeah, 100%, you know, it's throwing in the deep end, but I think because Tanya, she came from a bit of red hook crit racing in the past, so she has a knowledge of bunch skills. You know, she's handled a lot better than, say, when I raced with Leah, our other Zwift rider. Yeah, I was really, really impressed with her, you know. I was the captain on the road and I was kind of saying, yep, do this, do that, and she responded straight away. She's super strong and has a bunch of skills, and that's already the fundamentals you need, and then it's just teaching her the more the tactical and technical elements.
It was an early old start for the women's race today. How did you find the crowds in the road? Were they out already, or was it a little bit too early for them?
No, everyone was out, I guess, for the normal people, it's not a, not an early start, but for us bike riders, it was a bit of a struggle. But no, the crowds are phenomenal, you know, like huge crowds at the start. We can see a heap here at the finish and all the way along through the villages, the school kids are out. You know, the UK is incredible for that. Like, I love racing here for that reason. They get behind it and every town gets into the spirit and, you know, a really, really nice atmosphere.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Okay, our question this month for Rob Child, the Chief Scientific Officer at Science in Sport, is from Taylor Douthit. Hey guys, says Taylor, I'm planning an endurance ride from Chicago to Milwaukee and need some advice on nutrition. The ride will be about 200 miles, 321 kilometers round trip, which is 100 miles more than I've done before, and I know I'm going to have to eat quite a lot. How would your friends at Science and Sport recommend I eat so that I don't bonk? Looking forward to hearing an answer in an upcoming episode.
Fueling up with around 500 to 600 grams carbohydrate for the first couple of days before the event, coupled with some light training, will ensure that your glycogen stores are full at the start of the ride. During the ride, then you should focus on consuming about 60 to 80 grams of carbohydrate per hour in the form of gels, energy bars, drinks, and other small snacks as well. And this is something you should actually trial in training first, because a lot of products cause some GI upsets, and that's one of the things Science in Sport are very good at, is making products that can provide high levels of energy without causing stomach upsets. So if you fuel at this level, about 60 to 80 grams an hour that you've tested in training during the ride, then your risk of bonking will be very low.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast Femina. We heard our latest question there, of some interest to you too, Rose and Orla, given that it's somebody preparing for a long distance bike ride, as indeed you are.
Should it not be of interest to you?
A bit longer.
Yes.
Well, am I in charge of fueling?
I think you should be in charge of everything other than paddling.
Okay. We want high-vis jackets along the course.
I want you to do
I should be careful with this, a Team Sky style logistical strategy as to when we should be refueling, how much we should be refueling, at what given time.
Spreadsheets and stuff.
I want spreadsheets.
Yeah. Not my strength.
I don't want to have to look at the spreadsheet. I want you to tell me what's on the spreadsheet.
I'm not really a details person. Just to warn you.
I do know that, actually.
Yeah, at the end of the day, we are on the line with this.
Exactly. It's a cycling podcast Femina reputation.
I have been a DS before in a 9-day stage race.
How long did that last?
9 days.
Never again.
No.
How long did the riders last that you're looking after?
They all did all right. It was 2000, the year 2000.
Well, this is 100 kilometres, so you've got another 2 days of DSing ahead of you.
Well, it was good. I think that was a good apprenticeship for this challenge that I'm about to take on.
I can't wait.
Looking after Rose and Orla. And now we've said it, we're committed.
It's like we were not briefed on this at all.
No. I just spring it on you.
I have been kind of secretly training though with that maybe in mind. So.
Okay, all right.
So
cool. Excellent. Before all that, we heard your package from Yorkshire, Orla. Any other reflections? We're going to hear a couple more interviews that you did then on something else, I think.
Yeah, I thought my overall feeling on it was it was an excellent race, really. It was incredibly well organised. The racing itself as well was very dynamic,
exciting.
Your old creaky bones. It was a brilliant race. It was really enjoyable. I think the fact that it was just one level below Women's World Tour and yet we had the best riders in the world is testament, yes, as Danny Rowe said, to the prize money on offer for sure, but also to the organisation, to the platform it's given, the fact that you've got live television coverage from start to finish. It was really well done. I loved it. The only thing I would say, if Sir Gary Verity is listening,
of course he is,
as ever, I would love to see the two stages take place on the weekend, on the Saturday and Sunday when everyone is off work, because the crowds that we saw for the men's Tour de Yorkshire, if you didn't see it, I mean, it just gave goosebumps. It brought a tear to the eye. It was all the emotion, the passion, the energy that you want from professional cycling. The women's, which was staged on the Thursday and the Friday, was incredibly well attended. And speaking to fans who were there, they were a knowledgeable audience as well. And the riders themselves were very happy with the crowds on the road, certainly relative to what they maybe get at some other races. But it could be so much better. And the races on the days that it was staged started quite early in the morning. And so we had, from memory, about a 5-hour gap between the end of the women's race and the end of the men's race. So you're not going to have the same people hanging around for the men's race who are maybe then going to catch the end of the women's race as well and make an afternoon out of it, for example. So we didn't have as much of a crowd as I think it could have. And if we could see the women racing through the kinds of crowds that we saw at the weekend of the Tour de Yorkshire, what a statement that would be for the sport. I think it would be absolutely phenomenal. And I don't really see why they couldn't. I genuinely don't see any logistical reason why they couldn't. That is not a complaint. It's more that it would be wonderful if they could shift it along towards the end of the race and have it then. But brilliant race.
And you spoke to Lizzie Deignan and Sarah Story, and we're going to hear from them as well.
Yes, I did, because Lizzie Deignan has announced her pregnancy. So I spoke to her actually for an in-depth interview for my own
Here
podcast.
She goes again. Rose, anything to plug? Anything to plug? It's only fair.
Lapidal is the name of my production company.
You didn't even allow me to say the name of it. I'm going to say it while they're breathing. When Orla met.
Lapidal was the name.
But yeah, I sat down for a full in-depth interview with her. But I wanted to do bits as well where we're chatting specifically about her decision to take a break and what she thinks coming back to racing is going to look like, what it's going to feel like, who she's going to race for. So I spoke to her about that. And I also then spoke to Sarah Story the very next day. I saw her. She's now got two kids. She wasn't racing. She was there with her own team, the Story Racing team. She was driving the team camper van, making lunches for the riders as they come in, sorting out their nutrition and breastfeeding her 6-month-old while telling me that she's also back on her bike herself and getting back to competition. So if Lizzie wants an example of how you can multitask.
Or indeed me for my DSing.
Or indeed you for your DSing and your sort of halftime parenting while we've been podcasting here, yeah. Then Sarah Story I thought would be a good person to speak to because there aren't that many in professional cycling who come back as mothers. So a nice interesting parallel or juxtaposition, if you like, between the two. So you say you always wanted to be a mother and yet you've gone into a profession which isn't necessarily very conducive to producing large families. Was it a difficult decision for you to decide when might be the right time to start a family?
I always thought that having a family would be after my career. And it's only when you suddenly become 29 and you're married and you're the oldest person in the team, you're the experienced person in the team, and it happens quickly. And your mindset doesn't actually, mine hasn't changed. I'm still ambitious and I'm still focused and still determined. So it doesn't mean the finish line that I thought it meant. Rather than, you know, it stopping my career, I've seen it as an opportunity to prolong my career. And I think I've found myself in a position, you know, happily married and in a financial situation where I can do it, which I never really thought I'd be able to. So that's why we've decided to, you know, move things forward, I suppose.
So what about looking ahead to when the baby's born? And there are so many variables, there are so many unknowns, but presumably plans of some sort are in place. How do you foresee juggling your life with a baby in the future?
Just that, juggling it. You know, sometimes I've been frustrated, particularly in recent years, that my life is so one-dimensional and it's very cycling focused, and that works for a certain amount of time, but there becomes a point where that's not enough anymore either, and our lives are going to be so busy and so full. But it's a 2-year project essentially until the Olympic Games, so I think we can both get our head around the fact that we're going to be busy for 2 years, and it's worth the challenge. We see it as an adventure, I suppose, and it's definitely a we, you know. I think that's something that perhaps people underestimate as well. You know, I'm not doing this alone. Physically, I'm going through 9 months of change, but after that, it's both hands on deck, definitely.
Because your husband, Phil, is a professional cyclist as well with Team Sky. Any chance that his career would take a bit of a back seat so he'd be a stay-at-home dad?
You never know, yeah. I mean, he's going to be 35 this year and he's had a very successful career. So if that happened, then I'm sure he would embrace it as well. Yeah.
I read somewhere that you said there's been a mixed reaction among the peloton as to your news, and that some people said you were crazy. Is that right? I mean, what have people been saying?
I think it, in the peloton and in general, for me, there's kind of been this divide, very clear divide, of people thinking, wow, cool, what an adventure, and people potentially thinking, are you crazy or are you being selfish? And I suppose my own views over time have changed as well. If you'd asked me 5 years ago, I probably would have thought, well, why would you try and continue cycling? Why don't you be happy being a full-time mum, or, you know? And, yeah, with age and understanding and your own perspective on things, you realise that if you are capable of doing both, then, and you want to do both, then, you know, there shouldn't be judgment either way, really. It's, I think it should be whatever you want as a family, you should be able to do it without fear of judgment. And, going to go for it.
So in what sense selfish, then? Where does that come from? Trying to have it all, or...?
I think the fact that, you know, inevitably there will be nights away from my baby. And I think people, yeah, I've had judgment for that, I think, that people are sort of saying, well, how are you going to leave your child? And I'm like, well, in the same way that Philip will, you know, in the same way that plenty of parents do. I think I'm capable of loving my child and having a career. I'm capable of that easily. Like,
how have your team been with it? Publicly, they've said your position on the team is still open. You can ride for them once you come back from maternity leave. Maternity leave, that doesn't really exist in professional sports,
not
does
yet,
it?
No.
But how was that experience telling them, and how have they been?
They've been very good, yeah. I told them as early as I felt I could. They've been very supportive. Whether I stay with Bowls going forwards, I'm not sure yet. I think it's important for me to sort of take this time to reflect on what's the best option for me in terms of, you know, how I come back. I think I will need a team that's kind of very supportive of the fact that I'm going to be a mum and facing new challenges, and whether that's with Bowls or with someone else, I'm not sure at the moment. But I've made some great friends there, and they've been a great team for me, so I'm very grateful for the career I've had with them.
Sarah, how did that race go for the team today then?
It was great. We had Nia in the ninth, so top 10. I think we had a second rider in the top 20, so really good. It's obviously a flat and fast, flat out finish, and some very organised teams in there, and you've got some of the biggest sprinters in the world who've come to race here because they know how good this finish is. So to be in the mix is really, really good.
How difficult is that to take the likes of Bowles, Dolman, Zorn, Canyon, SRAM, to combat the level of organisation and professionalism they have in their bunch?
Oh, it's an incredible job to try and sort of get over, really. I mean, all these riders are, most of them have got a job or also at university. Nia's obviously come back from the Commonwealth Games after being on the track. So it's coming together as a unit, as trying to progress everybody individually, and also just allowing each of them to have their own personal goals within the race. But they're very experienced within the UK racing. They have never been in quite as hectic a finish, I don't think, but they survived. They're all upright here and enjoy the fact that they kind of were in the mix, and it's a really good learning process. And if they can get to be a professional, move up the ranks into a bigger team in the future, this sort of experience will stand them in good stead.
Because this isn't actually a women's world tour race, and yet we have the best riders in the world here, the best teams in the world. Does it feel like a step above what some of the girls would usually be racing?
Well, it's a 2.1 race, and we're used to that. We've raced in world tour races before in our previous team, Podium Ambition. So EJ was at the Tour of California, Rebecca Durrell has obviously been in drops for 2 years. Nia's raced at some big races, mainly track events, but some big road races as well. We've done this race before, but now this is a 0.1 race, which means it's the one below the World Tour. So we have experience at the highest level, and we have done World Tour, but we're starting to get those results that sort of show the promise that we've been promising, if you like, which is great, because it means that when we move on to the Women's Tour, which is a World Tour race, it's 5 days. Today, this week is kind of of like a race of two halves. We've got three sprinters and we did have three. We've now got two left because we've unfortunately lost one to a crash for the second day. So that meant that we could really focus on the three sprinters today. Tomorrow we'll focus on our other riders and give the sprinters a free rein to say, hey, if you're there, you never know, you know, just keep going and keep pushing. You might find you're actually a climber as well. So it's a great race to have that opportunity to move upwards and to have a top 10 in a field like this is really positive.
And what about you? What's it like for you? You've got little Charlie in your arms at the moment. You've taken a back step, I guess, from racing during your pregnancy. And obviously now, can we call this maternity leave? Not really, because you are still racing at the same time. But what's your role been and what's it like being backroom support, if you like?
Well, I was backroom support all last year. I did the odd race, mainly time trial for fun last year, and now I'm coming back into it. I'm not ready for this level yet. I'll be back into the national series a week on Sunday. I've already raced local races. My form's coming along quite nicely. We were in a handicap race last weekend and there was a 3.5 minute gap from my scratch group to the group that we were trying to catch, and I was able to bridge across to that. So that shows good form is coming and my speed is coming back. I tested that out as well. So yeah, it's just about being patient. He's only 6 months old and it's easy to think, oh, the season started, I must be better, but I need to keep it into perspective. So yeah, it's all good. And his sister's at school, she's about to finish reception year, so we have a lot going on, but it's great to have this team that I can jump into. They're obviously very well organised without me and I can be a part of the support crew on a day like today, make the lunch and clean up, and I might even have to do a few rubs because our swannies have gone to hospital to pick up our other rider who's gone out for a check. So yeah, we, you know, multitasking is what we women are good at.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you see elite athletes in other sports coming back sometimes stronger than they were before? We don't see very many mothers in the professional peloton. How difficult is it to come back as a bike rider in particular and get to that top level again?
Well, we've got people like Kristen Armstrong, Olga Zabelinskaya, both Olympic podiums, who've both come back. Kristen's got one boy, Olga's got three children. Amazing. I've not seen her since the Games in Rio, but there are a couple of three of us around, but it's hard because you're on the road so much. And I think for us, you know, we're balancing the fact my daughter's at school now, and we have an incredible setup back at home. She's at my primary school with a really supportive staff, and I'm mummy teacher when we need to be. So we're very, very lucky that we have that, and she's a very good learner, so she's not falling behind in anything. But no, it's a tough thing to do, but I think it's a good thing to do because it shows what is possible. Like, most jobs are tough, you know, whether you're on the road all the time as a journalist, whether you're running your own business with a shop or something else, everyone's job is tough to balance with family life, and this one's no different to that. So we just do it this way because it means we get to spend more time with the kids. They get to have this amazing travel experience as well. Louisa learning Spanish when we go away training camps, and a bit of German in the Lotto Ladies Tour last year, and French. So it's great fun, and I think we just have to sort of be calm about how much we can achieve. And then I just am very fortunate my parents come along and whisk the kids away for a playground while I get on a bike.
And we see Lizzie Deignan now as well, I guess following in your footsteps to a certain extent, hoping to keep her career going after having a baby. Are you hopeful that as you say, it just shows more people in bike racing that it can actually be done, and it is an option for them if they want to do it?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it was ever on Lizzie's radar to come back and have a family. She's always said, there's been no secret that she wanted to have a family, a big family as well. Married an Irishman too, so I think it was, but no one ever expected her to do it during her career, and I'm so chuffed for her that she's had the confidence to say, yeah, I think I can do this too. And it's hard as a roadie, but I think she'll have the right support. She's got an incredible support Yorkshire family who will be there every step of the way, and she'll find her niche. She's a very good one day rider, and that's always been her preference, I think. So that is absolutely achievable with what she's planning to do, and to go hopefully out with a big bang in Tokyo, she said. So yeah, it'd be very, very exciting to see her back here in Yorkshire 12 months after the little one's born.
And just finally, your husband Barney has been showing off little tiny little mini Team Story fleeces. Are you getting the kids all kitted out?
Yeah, well, Louisa rang up one of our sponsors and said, I need to have a fleece myself. So I think, yeah, we're getting the cutesy sizes now, although some of them might even fit Anna. Don't tell her I said that.
Brilliant. Well, Charlie's just woken up, finished feeding, so I'll let you get back to it. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you, Orla.
Well, we heard there from Sarah Story, and before that, Lizzie Deignan. That was a part of a longer interview that will be in the When Orla Met podcast, which is a series of long interviews that you've done. Very good they are too, Orla.
And I'm not even twisting your arm.
Particularly enjoyed the one with Judy Murray. Mm. Not cycling related, but I think she's fascinating.
She was amazing.
Really, really interesting. And she's a coach, of course. We're going to look at female coaches in cycling at some point in the future. I interviewed Frances Newstead during the Giro because Simon Yates, who was in the pink jersey for a long time, mentioned that his first coach, who was a very good influence, was Frances Newstead. And I was struck by that because there are so few female coaches. She ran the talent team for quite a few years at British Cycling. She's got four children now, so she's kind of stepped back a bit from coaching for the moment, but she intends to return to it. And an awful lot of really good riders went through her programme, including Lizzie Dagnan and Laura Trott and Danny King and lots of others, and lots of male riders as well. And that was really interesting, and she was a fascinating woman. So we'll hear that interview at some point in the future. But really interesting what Lizzie Dagnan said about teams. She's obviously under contract to Bulls Domas for this year. But she suggested, I think most people imagine she would come back with Bulls Domas, but hinting that she might not.
Yeah, and just a hint, really. But saying that whoever she rides for over the next few years, you know, she's grateful to Bulls Domas nonetheless. And it sounds like she's very much got this 2-year project to look forward to when she comes back. So the World Championships taking place in Yorkshire, of course, her home territory. So she would love to perform well there. And then the Olympic Games in Tokyo. So I guess when you look at those as being her main targets, you would imagine that whatever team she rides for has to be able to accommodate those ambitions, which are not trade team ambitions. And so perhaps, I don't know, I genuinely have no idea whether they've had conversations with Bulls Domas. I'd imagine that they have done, as to what she could work for them for whenever she comes back. But her individual targets are very much Team GB targets, if you like. So, yeah, I mean, the mind boggles as to where she would go that would allow her to accommodate that. Very intriguing, though.
It is indeed intriguing to wonder where Lizzie Dagnan will go if she doesn't stay with Bulls Domas. She's been so closely identified with that team for her greatest successes. Interesting stuff. We should, before we go, I feel like we should mention Katie Hall, who won the Tour of California.
Correction. The Amgen Tour of California Women's Race Empowered with SRAM.
It's less than a mouthful than it was.
Yeah, they used
less of a mouthful than it
used to be. Breakaway from heart
Amgen,
disease.
Breakaway from heart disease. Women's race empowered with.
With SRAM.
Katie Hall, though, she went close to winning last year. She won it this year, and you know, it's strange in a way because she rides for an American team. She doesn't race a lot in Europe. She doesn't race much or at all in Europe this year. She did a bit last year, but you know, there were some good riders there who've ridden well in Europe. Obviously, Kasia Nevedoma was third. I don't know if it's just American racing suits her. She's a climber, obviously. And she's an interesting character. She's doing or has done a PhD in molecular toxicology. And obviously that's a lot of work. But have you come across her, Rose? Because you've been out on Tour of California before.
Yeah, I was there last year and it was she won the kind of the queen stage last year as well. And she was in the yellow jersey there. And very slim lead to Anna van der Breggen. Anna van der Breggen won it by 1 second last year. And it was only from competing in the intermediate sprints. And she had the whole Bowls team doing that. And there was a bit of, UHC said there was a bit of elbow. Someone's not very happy with Christine Majerus' style of getting to this intermediate sprint. And I have to say, I was there on the finish line on the final stage when Anna had overturned her deficit and won. And there was a huge fight, shouting between UHC and Bowls Domas. UHC kind of felt that Bowls Domas were not cheating,
playing
dirty to get those extra seconds. And because Katie Hall put out such an amazing performance on that Queen stage, I think they were kind of felt cheated that it had been lost on these intermediate sprints.
But is that a difference in the style of racing, really? Because we do see that the American teams tend to stay in America now and it becomes a little bit more separate. And we saw that certainly with the clash this year with the Tour of California and Beira, most of the top European racers and teams stayed in Europe. I mean, the European style of racing is because of the European style of roads, which tend to be a lot narrower, more twisty. Elbows are everywhere. They're part and parcel of racing, aren't they? Are they not so much maybe in America?
I think that's definitely true. The American races are wider, flatter, there are fewer bends a lot of the time. And a lot of American riders, male and female, do struggle to adapt to that when they come over to Europe. Some don't, you know, some do pretty well, but it's something that if it doesn't come naturally to you, it can be difficult. And Katie Hall, I don't know her as a rider, so I'm not casting any aspersions about her willingness to get involved in that sort of stuff, but she is a climber. She's a slender climber. It you know, and Bulls Dolmans are a team that are well used to riding on narrow cobbled roads in Belgium and Holland and so on. So yeah, you can imagine that might have been an issue, but I don't know.
And I think also it was probably kind of blown up a bit because, I mean, I think UHC felt absolutely gutted to have lost that opportunity, have had a yellow jersey in the only US race on the calendar.
Yeah, she lives in California as well, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Her Strava profile anyway says that she's from Oakland, California. Not from Oakland, California, but lives in Oakland, California. So yeah, local girl, little local race.
So welcome to the new retro feature in Cycling Podcast Femina, where we talk about races held the previous year.
Oh yeah, just catching up. Well, yeah, but now good. She's like,
now she's won.
So now she's won.
Next year, next week, next month, we'll do 2015. Beera.
I think we're thinking small. Let's go 1985.
Yeah, let's do a proper as if we all have to wobble together, you know, when they do in the television world. And go properly back in time.
It's an idea. It's an idea. Anything else? Anything else before we close out for this month?
And we should mention High Tech.
Oh yes.
And Ollie, you briefly mentioned about Charlotte Becker winning it. I'm not sure about briefly mentioned, but
oh, expansively harsh.
Mentioned.
Oh, I think that was 12 minutes into the news roundup.
Oh, I like to be educational.
But no, the with Charlotte Becker won Chong Min, but a bit of a surprise.
Hurry up, Rose. Get on with it.
And just, I think, the week following, High Tech put a message out saying that a sponsor's dropped out. We need 50,000
euros. 50,000
euros. 50,000 euros. Euros to cover the rest of the season and to do the programme that we'd set out to do. And they've gone for the crowdfunding option. I actually don't think it's doing
not
that
really
well.
It's less than 7,000 euros as I speak.
19 days in, isn't it?
Yeah, you need real. I mean, the Cannondale team did it last year and raised a lot of money, but you need to get really have real momentum behind it. And that's it.
Connected fan base, I would say as well, you know, and have that profile as a team that can reach out to the public, you know.
Very difficult. You do when a team is reduced to crowdfunding, and that's what it is. You do fear the worst, don't you? So we wish them luck, I suppose. But
it's a team that might not have. Well, apart from Becca winning, obviously, this year, but not a lot of wins recently. But it's kind of a breeding ground for. Pretty much all of what is Wiggle's team now, like Veal, Longo Borghini, Cordon Rigaud, Farlin, Ashley Moorman, Tiffany Cromwell, everyone's been through there. So it's a bit of a worrying state of affairs.
Indeed. Well, we will return next month. Really looking forward to that. And we'll speak to you all then. In the meantime, thank you, Orla.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Orla.
A cycling podcast, Femina, in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.